Hello, and welcome to our CCAS research webinar, Inquiring Minds Mending Tiny Hearts. I'm Jennifer Lynch. This episode is part of a six-part series drawn from our December 2024 CCAS research webinar, highlighting conversations with leaders in pediatric cardiac anesthesiology. In this segment, Dr. Laura Downey introduces a dynamic discussion between Dr. Nishal Gottman and Dr. Justin Long on the application of bioinformatics in clinical research. They delve into how big data and informatics tools are shaping the future of perioperative research and offer guidance on building collaborative data-driven projects.
So next, we're going to hear from Dr. Justin Long. He's going to talk to us about how using your EMR bioinformatics to solve some of these clinical questions that we have. He's my colleague at Emory University and Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. He's currently an associate professor of anesthesiology and staff pediatric cardiac anesthesiologist at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. He's currently the director of pediatric cardiac anesthesiology. And one of the reasons we're talking to him today, he is the medical director of periprocedural informatics and medical technology at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. He has used large databases such as PRAN and STS to publish several studies, and I know he's working on a couple more. And a lot of his research has focused on cardiac anesthesia, artificial intelligence, and medical informatics. So, Justin, thank you for joining us today. And Dr. Nishal Gottman is going to interview him.
Hey, good morning, Justin. Welcome. And your background is informatics. You've done a lot of work in this area, and we've kind of moved from translational bench, QI, QI database, QI metrics. So if I were to be a beginner in this and I had a question like, how do you even get started getting data from my electronic record? And so that would be my first question.
Thank you, Dr. Downey, for the introduction, and Dr. Gowder for the questions. I think the most important thing when you're looking at the electronic medical record and trying to either answer something clinically or for research is to think about where the things that you're interested in are stored in the electronic health record. And that gives you an idea of how mineable they are or how readily you might be able to go back and fish for it. So it all kind of starts like a chart review, in that you really need to know where the stuff comes from. But more importantly, if you're working with an analyst who's going to help you pull the data or build additional data links, you really got to be able to show them too. And so I think first starting there, and then it depends on the medical record that you're working in, what kind of training is available. I think, Epic has done a little bit more robust job than Cerner in providing provider-facing training programs. But right now, it's very cheap for your institution to pay the small fee. And usually institutions will let you do it without too much trouble. But there are Epic training programs in being provider builders or being provider builders in analytics. So if you feel like you're not getting enough, from your local mentorship or from your local IT department, Epic has that all available on the user web.
That's great. Say I do have a question that I want to solve, either clinically, QI, or research. So what are the next steps? Like, how do I say, okay, hey, this is the question I need to solve? How do I get to my Epic person? Or what would be the exact steps? Say, let's just take the example of Epic, not that we're promoting Epic, but that's just an example.
So I think it's what is the question that you have and where do you measure that in the chart? So if you want to know, for instance, how many kids leave the hospital and then vomit at home, the question is, do you actually record that anywhere? And so if you don't, how are you going to create a formal way of recording that somewhere in the electronic medical record? But more easily for things that you already record, like first temperature on arrival to PACU and how your department is doing with temperature on arrival to PACU, you know that's recorded. You just have to figure out how you can reliably get that back to you in some sort of dashboard or tool within the electronic medical record. And there are a lot of ways to do that. Some of them are more automated than others. But again, the first thing is to decide whether or not you're recording the thing that you're interested in.
That's good. And what kind of data is available for clinical or quality use? And how do we say, okay, this is important data? Because there's a lot of data, and how do you filter through most of the stuff to get what you want?
That's a tough one. I think, you know, you're the expert in how the data is recorded in your department and in your hospital. You know how well people do or do not fill out certain parts of the chart. And so you know how really clean the data is in the area that you're interested in. If it's not very clean, then sometimes working through a large database, that's sort of the next step in doing data definitions. So that's why I've done a lot of large database work. Like there's this STS-CCAS database where we have very clear data definitions about how we record things. That's why there's not a one-to-one straight from the chart translation into that database, because we need to sort of modify and massage how we're recording things to be very clean for that database, as opposed to usually in the chart it's a little bit dirtier, so you have to figure out how to get to it. Other places are starting to use MPOG Pediatrics, which I think is very useful. MPOG Pediatrics, MPOG is a huge database run out of Michigan, a lot of places are signing up now. They do basically a data extract and clean up your data as it gets transferred to them. So defining those data definitions really happens at the point of implementation of your partnership with MPOG. Another one that's pretty common is, the name is eclipsing me right now, but the one is Seattle Children's, that has been used so much, and other places have signed up for it, and Project Spruce has run out of it. It was another basic way to take data from your EMR, clean it up, and then display it back to users in an actionable way through a dashboard.
You touched upon the STS database that's outside your institution. Are there databases like the Pediatric Regional Anesthesia Network? What are the challenges, or how do you go about getting information from them, and how easy is it, and what's the time frame?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have the impression that retrospective research will be faster, or the turnaround will be quicker, because you don't have to enroll patients and you don't have to deal with as long of an IRB process and you don't consent patients. I think that is not necessarily true, especially when you're working with data from these large databases. They have a certain time frame in which they evaluate your requests for data. So if you were to, for instance, put in a request to the STS-CCS database, the easiest way is to look up the people on the committee for the STS-CCS database and reach out to one of them and see what the process is for submitting your question. And then usually to work with somebody on that committee to make sure that your question is clean, as in it's using elements from the database that actually exist, and that the definitions for the kinds of things that you're asking match up closely with how the database is storing them. They evaluate, for instance, the STS database evaluates requests twice a year. And so you may have a long time to wait from when you submit to when it gets evaluated. And then beyond that, it can be another 6 months to see whether or not you'll get put in the queue for funding and prioritization for actually obtaining the data. So you're looking for a minor data request, could take 6 months to a year with the STS. And then you get a small amount of data, and then you apply for a large data grant, and that could take another year. So you're really looking for an STS published study, could be 2 to 4 years from the moment you decide that you have a question to the moment that you're actually able to get it published in a journal. So definitely something to think about when you're thinking about turnaround and timelines, but I do think it's a valuable way to do research. Obviously, we're collecting the data. We want to make good use of it. So if you have a clinical question that can be answered with MPOG or with STS, CCS, or PRAN, I think that you definitely want to pursue that. It takes a strong will to keep going.
That we are as pediatric cardiac anesthesiologists. So one question is, you got the data, you got your answer, and then this is retrospective data that you want to submit to a journal. Based on your experience or what you heard, how hard is it to get these published?
I think, anesthesia and just in publication in general in the last 15 years, I've seen the statistical rigor of those journals increase and increase and increase. And, you know, they're dealing with retrospective studies that have 1,000 to sometimes 100,000 or 200,000, data points, or let's say cases or patients. And I think that it's tricky to do the stats for that. Dr. Ferroni may be really good at doing his own stats, but I think that, when we're looking at statistical experts at these journals, you may have to redo the entire statistical analysis after you submit, and you need to be prepared for that. And so it's definitely not over from the point of submission. And it can be very challenging. You know, you may think you have a good question. You go through a couple of years of approvals, data query, and getting everything out. And then it may not be publishable at the end. And you have to overcome those setbacks just like you would overcome a setback in funding. You know, academic setbacks are common, and you should have to have your own resiliency. You know that this is what you want to pursue. You may pursue the same question, or you may pursue something entirely different.
Well, that's great. Well, the last question I have is, what kind of exciting projects that are there on the horizon for bioinformatics research, especially related to Pete's cardiac anesthesia? I think we're all looking forward to those answering those questions, right?
Yeah, I think, we've had some of the best studies, I feel like, have come out recently, answer questions that, you're like, wow, that is really obvious that we didn't know that, like, a few years ago, the vital signs paper that came out about what are normal vital signs under for pediatric anesthesiology when a patient's under anesthesia. It's just amazing to me. We've been doing this for 100 years, and we don't really know what normal is or what we should be shooting for, but we all kind of do the same thing. And I think those kinds of questions in anesthesia can be easily answered with retrospective data. It's just about feeling inspired to go after it. Things on the horizon, I think, I'm doing a lot of work right now in AI. And so, the questions range from very difficult, like which children might deteriorate under anesthesia when they have a history of congenital heart disease, to very easy in that we're currently trying to get something called LAMA 3.2, which is sort of a new version of an academic chat GPT with 22 billion tokens to get it to read an echo and just tell you whether or not the patient has clinically significant ongoing sequelae from their congenital heart disease. And, you look at an echo and you can do that very quickly, but basically we want to get the computer to do the same thing. And that's sort of tricky, uses natural language processing, AI. And so I think the most exciting questions coming up for us are going to be answered with machine learning and AI. It's just a matter of what do we want to know? And the more people that come to the table with questions, the more stuff we can get out there.
Thank you very much.